Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. The classic American musical Annie is at Proctor's in Schenectady this week in a touring production which chooses to issue recent adaptations and modifications to spin back to the pure fun of the original Broadway production. Opening last night, the new tour is staged by Annie's original lyricist director Martin Sharnan, featuring book and score by Sharnan and Tony Award winners Thomas Meehan and Charles Strauss. Annie includes, as if we needed to tell you, such unforgettable songs as Easy Street, I Don't Need Anything But You, It's a Hard Knock Life, and Tomorrow. And what would Annie's story be without her ultimately adoptive father, Oliver Daddy Warbucks? In the touring company, Daddy Warbucks is played by Gilgamesh Taggart, who joins us now. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
My pleasure to be here.
You opened in Schenectady last night. How did it go?
It was fantastic. The crowd was so generous, and we're so appreciative of that because... not to get into too much of the backstage aspects of it, but we do. We get, I think we're on 150, 160 show.
That's a lot.
But it's 8 shows a week, 48 weeks out of the year. But it's always important for us to remember that it's somebody's opening night. Even this Sunday, our last show, will be somebody's opening night or the first time they ever saw it. But it was, it's always nice to receive, the hero's welcome. And Schenectady really gave us that last night.
What was your relationship with Annie before you joined this production of Annie? Have you ever done a production before?
I had my first exposure to Annie was the movie, and I went to see that because at that point in my life I was a huge Tim Curry fan, and I got introduced to Albert Finney, who I've been a huge fan of his work ever since, and Carol Burnett, of course. You know, I grew up in the Midwest, so watching the Carol Burnett show was sacred. You know, you had to be there to do that. But I saw the movie, and I thought, wow, that was interesting. It was neat. I was aware of the comics. I've been both a newspaper comic and comic book fan my whole life. And then 2 years ago, Beck Center for the Arts, where I did a lot of theater in the Cleveland area, the artistic director asked me if I would play Oliver Warbucks, because I've been shaving my head for 10 years. I did it for a role with the Great Lakes Theater Festival in Cleveland, and then thankfully I did. So we did that last Christmas and the Christmas before, so I was very familiar with the character. But I have to say, being under Mr. Sharnan's direction, Martin was very clear on what he wanted, and he's right. I mean, he put the thing together.
Sure.
So it's been really fun continually discovering this character, even over the last 7 months.
What are some of the things about the character that you experience that you think maybe a general audience wouldn't think about?
It's very, most characters you see on stage, people get caught up in the iconic nature of them, what they represent, and especially in this sociopolitical climate, I'm playing a one percenter.
Right.
I try not to let that get in my head or think about that, because he's, although the finest compliment I've been given on stage with this role is a friend of mine clapped me on the shoulder and said, I'm very disappointed in your show. And I said, what? Like, why?
Yeah, oh no.
You know, what did you like? He says, you made a Republican likable. he's a raving liberal, and I love him for it. But it's interesting to remember that he's a human being. Although people can have everything and not know what they don't have. And finding that in him, that he's clearly, even in the terms of the plot, oh my goodness, good morning. In terms of the plot, we talk about many things about his billions and multiple billions that he has. And the fun part of that character, what I've really enjoyed discovering in him, is that he is the man who realizes that he literally has everything. The world is at his fingertips. He yells at the president.
He does.
You know, he's that guy. But then all it takes is the love of a child to put perspective to what real value is.
Yeah, it totally turns him on his head.
Oh, completely. And it's the fun of playing that is, and Martin was very clear. He says, I don't care how well the show's going. I don't care how quickly. I don't care what the pacing is when Warbucks hits the stage. Put it into high gear, you know, just kick it in. I'm like, yeah, that's exciting for me because I don't show up for 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to, you know, really get that excitement building. And when I storm on stage, just as I get my steam going, this little girl stops me. And that's exciting because I have 2 daughters. So I understand that completely. That no matter what plans you have, everything stops instantly when they need something. And, you know, for a man who could with a phone call, I mean, he picks up the phone and chats with J. Edgar Hoover. He, you know, yells at the president. He orders people around, and he's just a man who's accustomed to getting what he wants. And this little girl represents the one thing he does want, which is love. But when he realizes that what she wants is the love of her parents, that's when he becomes a father, because it's more about what's important, what's genuinely important to her, as opposed to what he wants.
How do your kids deal with you being on the road in a tour 48 weeks a year?
Well, I'm they both live with their mothers. I was married twice, so they're but they're I hope they're proud, you know, but it's it is a nomadic life. It always is. I mean, not just as a professional performer, not just as an actor. I'm a singer. I write, and I do a bunch of other things. I used to street perform. I eat fire. I do all kinds of, you know, because I don't have any other marketable skills. But fortunately, the theater life has embraced me. And although it's no comparison, it's wonderful. I mean, people always say, well, you know, that's why you can travel where you need that applause. The applause is nice. The laughter is nice. The response is nice. But for me, the true reward is when I leave the show and watch children of, I used to say 5 to 50, and now I've realized it's 8 to 80 and even beyond. In Tampa, we did a Q&A after the show, and this delightful older gentleman came up to me, and he shook my hand, and he said, I'm an 86-year-old kid. And, I mean, he talked about he'd survived war and cancer 6 times, and he said, and he never liked theater. And his current wife started making him go to opera and theater and plays and to really get a feel for it. And he was the example. He was literally this is why I do this. Or we'll have a lot of parents bring their special needs children in, and everything on the entire spectrum, including autism. There's something that live theater gives. And it's not the applause that we get back. It's sometimes just seeing a connection to another human being really live and breathe. That's wonderful.
When were you bitten by the theater bug? How did you begin performing in Michigan?
Apparently in the womb. I don't remember a time I did not want to be, you know, from the kid going, look at me, I'm going to do something. You
sure.
know, my first play was Billy Goat's Gruff. I was the troll under the bridge.
It's a good part. It's the best part in that
story. I like playing villains. I actually get to play the good guy for once. This is nice. But I've always done it. And I compare often theater to recess. It's just paid recess. Because when Logan's Run was on, it was a TV series based off the movie that ran for a while when I was in grade school.
Okay.
And every day after the show, we would go out and recreate the entire episode. And I remember thinking of that back in the days when we were doing black box theater and very simple stylistic theater, in that it's just you and maybe a couple of blocks and a curtain.
Right.
But you can create an entire universe with just that if you commit to it. And so it's always been there, I think. It's just a matter of that. Fortunately, I get some health insurance for it now.
That's great. And when did you know that you were absolutely going to pursue it as a professional career? And what paths did you take? Where did you study?
That's a very muddy path.
Because
I've performed with some bands as well. I write and write music and write lyrics. And we would sometimes the bands would take forefront. But for the last 14 years, it's been a struggle between teaching theater at Beck Center for the Arts in Cleveland, or Lakewood, a suburb of Cleveland, and performing it. And I was doing 7-9 shows a year, including cabarets and just other small projects. And I'm proud to report, not for myself, but the project in general, the program in general at Beck Center has produced some amazing people that are Rory O'Malley, who founded one of the roles in Book of Mormon the Musical. We've got Corey Mock that's out there. We've got so many students that I myself got to work with that are now either on Broadway or on Broadway National Tours. And it was something that was always back there, but I don't say I got lost with it, but I was happily distracted by trying to help the next generation, because I didn't have classes. I learned on the boards. I learned by doing it. Because there was no theater education in my high school or grade school. There was no, in my hometown, there was a small group of people, the Caro Arts Society then. Now they're the Thumb Area Center for the Arts, and we've got some fantastic graduates from there as well. But there was nobody there helping, giving a leg up. And I'm from a small farming town in Michigan, you know, it's cars and animals and farming, or, you know, it's labor. It's not, the arts just wasn't on the grid.
Right.
Wasn't on the radar. And I don't regret any of that, but I was happily swept up in helping others get their leg up. And then I stopped teaching. I started to, you know, I was hit my 40s. I decided, all right, I got to, maybe, what do I want to do? Mm-hmm. And I really had not lost sight of it, but I had forgotten my love of being on stage and what it meant to me to take it to a next level. And thanks to some fortuitous opportunities, here I sit.
A lot of the story around this production of Annie is emphasizing that it's a throwback, but in the most positive sense. That
absolutely.
That it dives back to the joy, and like it kind of erases some of the weirder things added in more recent adaptations. Well, weird isn't maybe a kind word, but you know what I mean. How is it different? What's it going back to?
You can't say it without entering some unkind word territory. Not that it's vicious or anything, but there were not just the production side of it or the originators, you know, Charles and Thomas Martin, oh my goodness, I can't believe, I'm going to pay for that. I know he's going to hear this and I'm going to pay for that. They had their own opinions on every project that's come out. Mr. Strauss just released a very positive a remark about Jay-Z's adaptations for the new movie. Mr. Sharnan was not a fan, and quite frankly, the audiences were not a fan of the 2012 revival, as exampled by how quickly it closed. And that's led to a lot of discussion, not with this cast necessarily, but for myself, because I'm privately a dramaturge, but also publicly pretentious. So this is always it's always on my mind. And there was one point on the tour where I said, you know what? Every time somebody adapts it, they forget one thing. The backdrop of the show is the Great Depression. And when you take the show out of the Great Depression, then you lose something. And that's where I think some adaptations have lost their point. But also beyond that, you can then focus too much on the Depression, which was one of the faults that people said the 2012 revival had. Martin just wanted to go back to the original feel, and not so much that it's a throwback to any. Yes, we've gone back to Peter Gennaro's original choreography with some new choreography thrown in by his own daughter, Liza Gennaro, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Martin was in and reminding, it was great listening to people that have been involved with this project for decades talk about, well, wait a minute, why did this happen? And this gag, why did we put that in there? Why was this moment this way? Because any theater project grows, it evolves. And it's important for the director, the stage managers, to maintain the integrity of the show, but then the director to come back and allow, you know, to allow some growth when the director comes back to go, ooh, I like that, keep that, or develop this more. But what he went back to was the original heart. It's a story about inspiration. It's a story about hope. It's a story, you know, the entire country is going in the toilet. And if you watch Hooverville, it was very important to Martin to say, you're not all a bunch of bums. You had money. 3 years ago, you may have been living on Fifth Avenue, but now you're broke. So let's bear that in mind, because at the end of the scene, the officer shows up and says, all right, all you bums out of here. And Annie has to be able to say, they're not bums. They're just people down in their luck. And that's very true. She's the one person who sees the optimism in everything. She sees the good in everything. And not that she's blindly optimistic, but she's the representation of that indomitable American spirit of, I will not give up. And it's just not an option for her. And that strength is something that's mirrored in the, you know, Warbuck sees that in her. And that's what's fun about that character, is realizing, well, I remember, because his start, he tells it. His parents died before he was 10, and he promised himself he'd never be in that situation again. He'd never be broke again. So he got lost in his pursuit of money because he thought that meant happiness. And thank goodness for him, this little girl shows up and shows him otherwise.
There's a saying in performance arts, you shouldn't work with kids and dogs.
Actually, the phrase is you shouldn't work with children or animals.
Right.
We're working with children and animals,
right.
And I think that's the secret.
If you put them together, it's okay.
Exactly, and somehow it works, because it's humbling in a proper way for us as actors, because no matter how popular or how excited we think people may be to see us, and as a parent we know this too, put a dog in the room, you cease to exist. that's good, though. We do have a very nomadic lifestyle, and it's wonderful to have the children, and they travel with their mothers. One of them travels with a chaperone, but generally they all travel with their mother. And it's great to have them there just to remind us you know, that, hey, no matter how bad we have it, we can suck it up. We're adults, you know, we can say, all right. But, to the, you know, it's not a skin knee to them. It's a mortal terror when they skin a knee. And that, emotionally speaking, they're on the road. And they get that joy of presenting all of that to the children of the world. But they're the Pagliacci now. You know, they can't go to somebody and go, I'm feeling sad. I'll go watch Annie. They are in Annie. So it's really important for us to stay in contact with them. And their mothers are wonderful people. Taking great care of their kids. And believe me, they're working harder than we are because they're going to school.
Right.
But having the children there and having the dogs there, it sometimes it's all it takes. You know, scratch a belly on Sonny or Macy and all of a sudden life is better again. And sometimes I'll be feeling down or I'll just be, you know, off in my own little world. And I have a particular fondness for the young lady playing Pepper, who's also the Annie understudy. Her family, Adia's family, the Dant family, have all been so generous to me. And every once in a while, I'll just be sitting and she'll come over and give me a big hug and a kiss on the cheek and everything's better. Everything's fine. And I think there was a, wow, okay, yeah, there it is. So that actually works very well. And plus, you hear the kids out there, they have someone they can connect to and associate with on stage. And who doesn't love a dog? I mean, who doesn't? And if you don't like a dog, shame on you. Go find a rescue animal, which is, by the way, William Berlone only works with rescue animals, the dog trainer.
That's great.
And yeah, so it's wonderful. And we've actually done a little fundraiser for some organizations regarding animal rescue, which is a nice way that we can give something back.
Gilgamesh Taggart plays Daddy Warbucks in the touring production of Annie that is playing at Proctor's through this Sunday. For more information, visit proctors.org. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.